You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
Hello, folks. This episode of The Majority Report is brought to you by Ting.com. Ting gives you big savings and billing clarity for mobile phone service. Try their online savings calculator right now and save $50 on your device purchase at majorityreport.ting.com.
It's Sam Cedar launching an illegal invasion and occupation of your brain.
Hi, folks. Sam Cedar here for the Majority Report, just reminding you, today is Casual Friday.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's Casual Friday. That means Monday is Casual Monday, Tuesday, Casual Tuesday, Wednesday, Casual Hump Day, Thursday, Casual Thurs, that's what we call it. And Friday, Casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, October 12th, 2012. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live from a conference hall surrounded by conference booths in the Bellagio Hotel in, I guess it's sunny Las Vegas. I have no idea. I haven't seen daylight in almost 3 days. I imagine it's the sun is shining somewhere. Today on the program, Cliff Schechter. And it's possible some other guests. Yesterday we had a late guest, Judge Diaz. There's also a slight chance that today I will simply just pass out in the middle of the show. But I will do my best. And what else can I tell you? In terms of the news today, I have not been keeping up too much. Obviously, last night we did the debate coverage, Cliff Schechter and I, live. And that will be available for members as a podcast. We will post that sometime later today. So, by all means, check that out if you're a member. If you're not a member, ask yourself a question. Why am I not a member? I can tell you, now more than ever, we need your membership. I have, I was experimenting with a style of betting called Negative Progression, which, you really need to have, brass cojones. And I think I found out that mine are lead. They're a little bit malleable after a while. And then the whole system falls apart. And so, right now, I've instructed my wife to begin to train my daughter in golf, which I understand is the best chance of getting a young girl into a scholarship into college is golf for some reason. I'm not exactly sure why that is. There is no golf talent in my family as far as I know, although I'm pretty good at miniature golf.
Hey, Majority Report listener, this episode is brought to you by Ting. Ting is a new mobile service that makes sense. It's all about bringing billing clarity, usability, and big savings to mobile phone users. I'm getting fleeced by my mobile carrier, and I can't even figure out how. My bill is so complicated. Ting has a simple plan with honest fair pricing that bills megabytes, minutes, and text messages separately. They offer 4G Android phones through Sprint. They mean big savings. They're run by geeks, so they know what kind of customer service you want. All you got to do is visit majorityreport.ting.com today. Check out their usage calculator. See how much money you'll save. And if you end up buying a device purchase, you'll save $50 on that via majorityreport.ting.com. Check it out today. Majorityreport.ting.com. Ting, it just makes sense.
All right, folks. So first up on the program today will, of course, be Cliff Schechter. But, of course, before we have Cliff Schechter, we need to have the Cliff Schechter theme song. So here, ladies and gentlemen, is the Cliff Schechter theme song. Oh, let me try that again. All right, we're going to have to try that one more time. I'm not going to shortchange the Cliff Schechter theme song.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC, New Media, Public Relations, and Strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, Cliff Schechter is here with me now. He was literally dancing. You were sort of dancing in your chair.
Yeah.
To that theme song.
Well, you know, if you can call it dancing.
Do you do that when you're, like, at home on the phone calling into the program?
I think we should just leave that to mystery, Sam.
You know, Cliff, before we get into the debate and the reactions to it, what you thought about it, etc., etc.
There was a debate?
There was a debate last night. Let me tell you that I sit across from you. You seem completely awake. You just told me that you were working out in your hotel room.
Yeah.
I, on the other hand, am totally exhausted. It turns out I may have an allergy to vodka if I mix it with wine and beer and drink enough of it. It seems to, I think I had an allergy.
There's actually a name for the allergy. I think it's called alcohol poisoning.
Pretty close.
See, the difference is why I was able to get up and work out is because after a fun-filled dinner with lots of interesting people here, you chose to hit the tables because you wanted to negatively progress towards poverty.
I did. I actually positively progressed. In that respect.
And I felt, I went for the ride a few nights ago and lost a bit of money. And I felt I had a bunch of stuff to write last night and whatever. So I got in and, you know, didn't go to sleep really early, but early enough that I could wake up and feel like not a completely lost soul this morning. So,
yeah, I guess I have not learned my lesson. And I really have to say that I think I'm a good gambler, but the bottom line is that you're supposed to lose unless you really, you got to sit down with a bank. That's what I realize now. You got to sit down with a real bank, as it were. All right. Well, so let's move on. Last night, watching the debate, your thoughts, Cliff Schechter.
My thoughts, as we laid out during the time, but I guess only members will get to hear the thoughts that I shared. I thought it was as clear a victory for Joe Biden as you could have. The fact that people on the right today are trying to bring up the smirk and how mean he was. He's just so mean. We love it when Chris Christie throws all 500 pounds of his Krispy Kreme frame at a poor constituent who just happens to ask a question. And we love Joe Walsh when he doesn't pay child support and he berates all his constituents. But Joe Biden's just so mean. He's so mean. I mean, he destroyed Paul Ryan, and Ryan had a few good lines and a few good moments. Not to say Paul Ryan was completely incoherent. He has the depth of knowledge. One person on the stage looked presidential, like they could be a president, and one looked like they were a little child that need to hop up on the stool and listen to a lecture. And I mean, I'm sorry, that's just the way the whole thing came off to me. That was the stylistic point, but it wasn't just in style. I mean, Biden knew things. Ryan memorized things. I mean, you know, it reminded me, I think I said to you last night, of that Will Ferrell skit on Saturday Night Live where they made fun of Bush because during the second debate in foreign policy, I think it was 2004, he kept throwing out all of these, like, names of leaders and things that he'd obviously memorized.
Right.
You know, Mobutu Sese Seke, you know, and stuff like that. And so, you know, I mean, I just didn't think it could be any clearer. I thought Biden cleaned his clock. Important note, folks, because people were looking at this CNN poll that had Paul Ryan winning a little bit. That was among all voters, not swing voters. Among swing voters, the one at CBS had Joe Biden winning by 19 points, 50 to 31. Frankly, I don't even see among how all voters. Well, anyone could have come to the conclusion that Paul Ryan.
There's another aspect of that CNN poll that one should point out.
It was done by CNN?
Well, no, they oversampled Republicans. Now, look, people can go back and forth. There were 10% more Republicans giving their answers, their response to that poll,
right,
than otherwise if you actually had it balanced out between Democrats and Republicans. Because again,
actually, the complete sample was David Gergen and Mary Madeline.
That's right. Apparently, you know, it's a small win for Biden. So, but be that as it may, I think we'll get into some of the substance, because really for me the most interesting stuff obviously is Social Security and Medicare.
Yeah. And I want to be clear just for a second. I mean, I don't mean to cut you off, but again, I have to keep reminding people of this because I don't do the fanboy thing. And, you know, at the time and since then, I've again and again said that I think President Barack Obama put in one of the worst debate performances I've perhaps ever seen in my life. Certainly on the presidential level, I think maybe Bush in 2004, that first one came close, but I think Obama's was even much worse than that. So I'm not shading this. I'm not going towards the guys I like. I just don't understand how anybody could watch the same debate I was watching last night, like someone like David Gergen, and think that was a draw. Well, I just don't get. I mean, one guy was clearly in command and the other guy was clearly a little child trying to get up to speed, and it just wasn't even close.
I think there are probably some voters out there who don't understand a lot of what is being talked about. I mean, I think it's very hard for us as people who actually know what they're talking about. I mean, you know, during the Romney-Obama debate, there were times where I was literally going like, I'm lost here.
Particularly when Obama was speaking, I had no idea what the heck he was saying.
And it wasn't that it was policy dense, it was that it was just dense.
Yeah.
But I suppose it's conceivable that someone could just say, like, you know, I don't like Joe Biden's capped teeth or whatever it is. But the honestly, like,
those hair plugs are putting me off.
But really, when you're talking about a debate like this, it's almost, you know, the vice presidential debate at this point, it really is done for the media. And, I mean, and for some voters, but in terms of its lasting implication, it stops whatever hemorrhaging was going on with the last debate. It resets everything.
Yes.
And I'm just speaking about this specifically in terms of the horse race, as it were, now. And so it changes the narrative. I gotta say, you know, Paul Ryan, what scares me about Paul Ryan is he is, I think someone, I don't know who said this, but he is a sort of a stupid person's idea of what a smart person is.
I wrote a whole column about that, pointing out that he and Scalia and Newt Gingrich, this is about the trifecta, this is about 6 months ago, that those are the three that were considered smart people. And I'll let you continue. I don't mean to cut you off.
No,
it's rather amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I mean, because, you know, you could see how sort of formulaic everything that he was offering was. And when he had the freelance, literally, I thought he was going to cry when they started to, when Raddatz started to push him on Syria, I thought he was going to cry.
Yeah.
And just go like, but no one
told me this was gonna be on the test. I didn't know. Wait a second. Okay, time out, everybody. I really thought that that's what would... He just had this look on himself like, this is not fair
right.
to get a follow-up question on Syria.
Again, I just don't see how anyone could watch this. And again, this is even getting into the substance of it,
right.
which where he was just terrible. But on the sort of stylistic points, just the looking at it, looking at the stage and looking at these two guys, how could anybody look at his little pursed lips and and look at this guy and say to themselves, this could be a guy who has to make a choice of whether or not we need to bomb another country, whether or not we need to defend ourselves, whether or not we need to take massive economic action because a crash is coming, whether or not a natural disaster is about to hit New Orleans in the form of Katrina or another city, and this is the guy, you know, it's like Bush, but worse.
Well, that's the thing, is I think, you know, unfortunately Bush has
lowered
sort of inoculated people like,
he came off like a child. That was honestly, well, I can't say that enough times.
That's the interesting thing, and again, folks, you know, bear with us here as we get through sort of this type of analysis. You're seeing... Immediately after the debate last night, we put it up onto Twitter. Which station do you want us to watch? Which cable outlet? And we turned it to CNN and I think also to Fox and MSNBC. And the right winger, the Republican on MSNBC, the Republican on Fox, you know, they have Joe Trippi.
Right.
Oh, poor Joe. And it was Stephen Hayes, I think, that horrible guy who wrote Cheney.
Who once was a libertarian, but then he found money to write a Dick Cheney book.
Exactly. And then I heard this, obviously, was on Fox as well. Their first critique was Joe Biden's smile.
Right.
And I think, you know, Mary Matlin... picked up on, I think it was Chris Saliza writing, is Joe Biden's smile the same as Al Gore's sigh?
Oh, I don't even think Saliza just wrote it. I think that was fed to him. And I think
right.
a couple of conservatives during the debate, it's like they don't all know how to text each other and email each other.
Right.
We're like, we're getting our asses handed to us. We need to do what we did in 2000 when Al Gore won on substance, but we were able to take it away from him
right.
by pointing out all the sighing and all the whatever. That was, I mean, to me, there's no way they all
right.
just came to that conclusion.
That is the primary indication, I think, of how they thought that they had lost the debate. Now, of course, that's not going to work. It's not going to have the same traction as the Gore thing, because the Gore thing supposedly fed into a narrative that was pre-existing, that had been built up over the course of the campaign. He's professorial.
Right.
He is, he thinks he's better than everybody. He's
and there's
bombastic.
Also, that's important, but also there's a hugely different media environment today. Let's be honest. In 2000, you had Fox News. MSNBC
right.
was trying to give shows to people like Alan, what's his name, Keyes.
And, right. did,
and
yes.
did give a show, was giving shows to people like Savage out in San Francisco.
Uh-huh.
You know, you had no Current. You had no Center for American Progress.
No
you had
radio.
No Media Matters. You
no.
had no... I mean, you know, you didn't have anything to point out who's lying, who's... So at least now, not to say we compete, you didn't have Sam Cedar sitting here doing this
there,
right now.
No.
We've got people who can answer the BS.
Well, that's true. But I also think that the problem is it's not going to stick to Joe Biden, because the idea of Joe Biden being condescending, no, people think of Joe Biden as goofy or the guy.
He's your favorite old drunk uncle.
Yes.
That's what he, you know?
And so the idea that he is condescending, really, I think, is problematic for them, because it really, I mean, look, you can overanalyze how much what is relevant about the vice president. But if anything, what condescending implies is that Paul Ryan is a child.
Right, and in a way, I actually would admit that charge. I think there are times where he was a bit condescending, because he was sitting there dealing with a little child who was lying about
right.
stuff and clearly out of his element didn't know things. I would be condescending, too.
And the problem is that there is no, when people think of Joe Biden, regardless of what they think, even I think his detractors, the last thing that they would say is he's condescending.
Right. He doesn't come off as a nasty. No.
And so
good try though. Good work, Mary.
Indeed. And so I think, you know, clearly the right felt that there was no traction for them. All right, now let's get
for
a little.
For the one millionth time, I can't help myself. I'll just have to say it, because we saw a great talk here at our convention that we're at yesterday by James Carville.
Mm.
How he's married to that woman. I just have no idea.
Yeah, well, you know, he probably knows.
That's what's called justifiable homicide, as far as I'm concerned.
He's probably...
I'm not sure I follow that, actually.
What I would do if I were married to her.
Oh.
I guess I shouldn't make jokes like that.
Maybe
that's
suicide.
That's pretty terrible. So, yeah, I'd just kill myself, I think.
And, yeah, well, I mean,
apologize to the women out there. That was kind of wrong of me. My bad.
Well.
No, I shouldn't be making spousal abuse jokes. I really shouldn't.
Well,
that,
all right.
That was bad.
Let's move on. Let's not highlight that. We'll put that on the highlight reel.
I have my special moments.
Yeah, that was that's quite good. All right, so let's. I was trying to see if I had my news. I guess I don't.
Scott Milken's still laughing at me.
I thought I had my news thing, but all I have is sort of like a. I don't know.
Cliff Schecter, Libertas LLC.
You're gonna change the subject.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about the substance. The back and forth. I want to also get to the questions that were and talk about Martha Raddatz a little bit. But one of the things that Raddatz asked, I mean, I thought on balance, she did an okay job.
Right.
One of the questions she asked was actually answered by Biden fairly well, but not great. Started with the premise that Social Security and Medicare are going to go bankrupt.
Yeah, it's an awesome premise. Well researched.
How are you going to do? I mean,
Jesus,
it is so aggravating. It is fundamentally, it is definitionally impossible for Social Security to go bankrupt. It is just impossible. To say that Social Security is going to go bankrupt is to say that any attempt to tweak the benefits, or slash the benefits, or tweak the benefits, or moderate the benefits, or jiggle the benefits, is also Social Security going bankrupt.
Yeah, you can. You got to blow the whole thing up, apparently, because it's so bankrupt.
Well, but my point is this, is that Social Security does not... Bankruptcy means that you spend money that you cannot pay. Social Security does not do that. It statutorily is not allowed to do that. It cannot do that.
And once again, a reminder, it's separate from the rest of the budget.
It's separate from the rest of the budget. It cannot add to the deficit statutorily by law, in other words. And as much money is paid in, gets paid out, and the only thing that can happen is less money than has been promised will get paid out. In other words, there'll be cuts.
Right.
That's the only thing that can happen with Social Security. You can just cut it.
Yeah.
And it's either cuts that are going to take place in 2033 if we don't raise the cap, which and the projections are accurate, which many
Remember,
times they are more conservative.
2033.
2033, that is... You know, I imagine you and I will still be around. We'll be growing.
I hope so, but we'll be entering our golden years.
Indeed. But at that point, you get a cut of 22% across the board if nothing is done and those projections are there. Anything anybody else is talking about is a cut just before that time. There is no bankruptcy. It is a complete lie. And it's just stunning to me that... You know, it's not like Social Security just popped up. It's a new program. This thing's been around for 70 years.
But what it tells you is just the pervasive nature of the Pete Peterson, as well as many others in Washington, their propaganda campaign. Because I think actually Martha Raddatz, who's somebody who's supposed to be pretty well informed, honestly believes that.
Yep.
I don't think she's just saying.
No, I agree.
I think she thinks, because she's seen enough of this stuff, that is what she believes. And the fact that you can sit there, I mean, it's like, it's so maddening to be in this alternate reality, to just have all the evidence say the opposite, to know that if you just were to take on adjusting the payroll tax and who has to pay it, and if President Obama and people in the Democratic administration, they could do what Bernie Sanders has proposed, if they say they don't want to raise any taxes on anybody making under $250,000 a year, well then just get rid of the cap on the payroll tax for everybody
right.
making north of $250,000 a year.
Right.
Problem solved, nothing. But go well beyond that, because to me Social Security is sort of it's part of the greater budget hysteria. Like, we've never been here before.
Right.
And, I mean, were these people alive? I mean, I remember when Bill Clinton was in office, and back then, Ross Perot was freaking out, and, oh, my God, what were we going to do? It wasn't tough. He did it. They raised some taxes on top earners. They did a few things. There were some adjustments. Boom, we had budget. We had surpluses as far as you could see.
Which everybody was terrified of. I mean, frankly, and which is the reason why we
had that. Right, because then Alan Greenspan said, oh, my God, the surpluses are too big. We've got to cut taxes. I'm just saying, like, this stuff is so untethered from reality. It is so ridiculous. As it was brought up in the debate last night by Joe Biden, you could, for example, do what every other industrialized country does and let our federal government, let HHS negotiate the price of pharmaceuticals with the pharmaceuticals, and that would lower the cost by billions, hundreds of billions. Right. Every other country, the Veterans Administration does it. You could do that. You could re-import drugs that would lower the cost. You could end this stupid drug war that puts people in jail for smoking pot so we're paying for them. You know, I mean, I could come up with 50 other things off the top of my head you could do. Get this supposed fiscal cliff, which pisses me off because my name is in there, by the way. I'm going to kick somebody's butt. Hey, Kyle Shang calls me fiscal cliff, all right? I'm coming to get you, Kyle. I mean, in all seriousness, that we're acting like this is the end of the world when a couple simple things, if we were willing to come together, could get rid of all these deficits in a second. It wouldn't even be difficult.
Yeah,
it's
and
just
we heard
maddening.
The words debt crisis.
There's no crisis.
And there is no debt crisis. A debt crisis means that our debt is so high that no one is loaning us money at anything. I guess I don't know what the actual number that people would say, but under 15, 20, 25%, that's a debt crisis. We now have the lowest cost of borrowing, I think, that we've had in 50 years. To the extent where most economists say it is irresponsible for us not to borrow at this, with the cost of money is so cheap. I mean,
I just bought a new house. I mean, the a few months ago. I mean, it's unbelievable. The rate we got was so much lower than the one a few years earlier.
Well, yes, but I mean, I'm specifically talking about Treasury bonds.
I know. I'm just saying rates overall in general.
I don't want to encourage anybody to buy a house or, frankly, have a family.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's fair enough. I'm just saying all this craziness, all this sort of everybody, beating themselves over the head and all this. If you are alive and you remember what was going on in the mid-90s with the Republican Congress freaking out and, all, oh, my God, just me crazy, and Ross Perot and the rest of them. And then, of course, they spent like they spend and still Bill Clinton found a way to balance the budget. And I criticized Bill Clinton on lots of things, but on budgetary matters, he raised taxes on top earners. He did a number of things that were very good. And, again, these things, it's not like these things can't be done again.
Right. And then I'm not even quite frankly to be sure that we even need to do those things.
Should raise taxes on top earners.
Yes,
I think you'd agree with me.
But I think the reasons to do that are not necessarily to close the budget deficit, but rather to spend it on other programs.
I think you do it for a variety of things. For tax fairness, for making sure some bridges don't fall down and building some infrastructure, but also there'll probably be some money in there that can go to the budget.
I don't want it. But we can have that argument another time.
We don't need to have that argument. I don't care.
No, we'll have that argument. But
I'm going to take you outside and beat that argument out of you.
But I also want to say in terms of Medicare, part of a good part of Medicare comes from the hospital insurance tax, which is also a dedicated funding stream, just like Social Security. Payroll taxes are to Social Security. Medicare is in a growing burden and problem in terms of our budget, but that is a function of the cost of health care in this country.
Right. And because we've done no cost control measures whatsoever.
No cost control measures whatsoever. And to the extent that anything is mitigating and slowing that rate of increase, it is Medicare. Right. It is costs under Medicare.
Because Medicare only has 3% overhead.
Well, there's two different things that I'm talking about. Medicare is a far more efficient delivery mechanism of insurance.
It's the most efficient in the world, actually.
Because it has only a 3% overhead. But at the same time, it also slows the rate of increase of the cost of medical care.
That's right.
Because they are far more sort of forward leaning in terms of trying to control costs by doing more comparative effectiveness studies than the private insurance industry does. Because the private insurance industry they mark up their product quite a bit. So yes. the cost of
medical shocker care. That
now
occurs.
They end up adopting a lot of the things that Medicare does in terms of trying to provide some cost control.
Which is again why the public option was so important, because it would have provided that public competition, a program that doesn't mark up,
right.
And they would have had to compete with that. And again, if you right now had reimportation of prescription drugs, if you had negotiation going on with HHS like every other country does again to lower the prices, if you had a public option, just those three things alone would save hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars.
Right. Susan Collins, I think it was, or one of the senators from Maine, I can't remember, but back during the public option debate, I think it was in 2008, 2009, she said, we cannot do this because it's unfair competition. Because the public option doesn't need to make profit.
I actually had a lot of right-wingers saying that. Like that it was so funny because I went on a few of their shows and whatever, and their response was, it'll kill the private insurance industry. And so I was saying, so what you're saying is it's too good. It works too well
exactly.
for people, and you don't think private insurance can do as good of a job. So you're admitting that government right. is better than the private sector. Is that what you're admitting? You should have seen their reactions. It was wonderful.
No, that's exactly right. And of course, that was... Let's not relitigate that failure. But
I don't want to go into everything. It's not that I'm even trying to relitigate it. I'm just trying to, again, and maybe I'm talking too much about this, but, because the premise of Martha Raddatz's question
right.
was so utterly ridiculous that I feel like I need to sit here and list the 100 different ways that there'd be no deficits tomorrow if we really had the will to do it. I haven't even gotten to defense spending yet. And what went on last night when another big lie, Ryan's like, we're not raising a defense. What are you talking about? It says in your damn plan that was still up on their website at that moment that they were going to jack up the defense spending. But no, we're not going to raise it. We're just not going to cut it. I mean, again, another thing. Forget that. We should be cutting it. And,
right.
and most of you listen to a lot of these military experts and guys who've worked on the Hill and people. I talked to some of these people for the book I wrote on McCain about wasteful military spending. You could take 15-20% of that budget without even blinking.
Right.
You know, it's just... There's so many ways to do this. Okay, I'm done. I know. That question pissed me off.
I want to get to the answers because one of the other sort of highlights in my mind of the debate was talking about Medicare when Ryan started to say I don't think he used the word robbed because they were using that for a while, that Obama robbed Medicare to pay for Obamacare. And I think they did, he got their hands in the piggy bank or the cookie jar, I think is the way that he phrased it. And
very creative messaging, by the way.
He had said that he tried to pass off, I think it was a lie about the administration's accountant came to Congress and said that, 20% of all the hospitals and nursing homes are going to have to close now because of Medicare Advantage.
And dogs Biden, and cats living together.
Well, Biden just hit him. And he said that's not true. Ryan said, well, there's a benefit cut in Medicare Advantage, which, of course, is not true at all. It was a reduction in payments because Medicare was overpaying for the same services.
And why they haven't responded in that way. And
well,
said, so you like corporate welfare. That should be the simple response.
Well,
so you
right.
like overpaying for services and wasting American taxpayer money. That's you out there, everyone. They want to waste your money on giving it as subsidies to private companies like they do with oil subsidies, like they do with, I don't know why they don't tie it into that theme of the corporate welfare these guys love handing out.
Yeah. And so I thought Biden did a very good job at that during that exchange.
No, I still think he did a great job. I just wish they'd sort of
be a little bit tougher. And, you know, I was also, again, I don't know, it's, I guess, like a broken record. I was a little bit nervous. Joe Biden has said publicly, no cuts to Social Security.
That's right.
Period. Guarantee. Last night, he said, I promise you, and I thought he was going to say this again, I promise you, we will not privatize Social Security.
No, I know, and I missed that for a second, and you caught me on it, which I appreciate.
And I, you know, look, I got an email the other day from a longtime listener who was very angry because I'm being counterproductive by raising these issues. And
I both think that I, first of all, don't know what it is I'm supposed to be productive towards in his mind.
Well, I know what it is because I get this all the time, too. You are supposed to just be a good soldier and say that everything that Obama and Biden do is wonderful. And I'm sorry, that's not the role I play. That's not the role you play. I'm not on their campaign team. I think we're both very clear that we think they need to win.
Right.
But that doesn't mean that there are no criticisms along the way. And assuming a President Obama does win, there's going to be a huge battle right afterwards, and I'm sorry for anybody, you know, who thinks that this isn't important enough, but maybe that means you're not relying on Social Security or Medicare to live, because to them, that's as important an issue as whether Obama gets elected or not, because there are people that will die if they don't have those benefits. There will be people that will go into poverty. Mm. So I'm sorry, but it's inconvenient, but we're not going to stop raising these issues.
I'm actually curious as to, you know, we have thousands and thousands of listeners of this program. I'm curious, is there anybody out there who is specifically not going to vote for President Obama and is going to vote for Mitt Romney because they're concerned about the grand bargain?
Because what we about say on your show about the grand bargain.
I mean, I'm just,
right.
You know, I whatever.
Maybe they think, well, demoralizing people. Maybe they think, and again, I think you and I are pretty clear. And I say
up.
Again and again.
That's what I say. Grow up.
I say again and again. You don't want as Joe Biden made abundantly clear last night, and this is one of the most important issues I think people forget at times, you don't want someone to bomb Iran just for the fun of it, because a couple of neocons in a think tank somewhere think it's kind of cool. Well, then you need to support Obama and Biden. You don't want to see another Alito Scalia on the court.
Right.
Then you need to support Obama and Biden. Those are two of the biggest issues to me, foreign policy and the courts. But there are plenty of other ones, too, that we all know about. There are a lot of people, you know, in the LGBT community or women who are among women, immigration, among kids who have benefited from what President Obama has done. And it's not to say he's been perfect on those issues. I know you'd bring up deportations. I'm not saying he's wonderful. I'm saying, but there's a difference in worldviews here. There's
right.
One side that thinks that government can do good, can be on our side, and there's another side that thinks it's only an instrument of terror, except for when it's coming into your bedroom, then it's good. I've said many times you need to support Obama and Biden, but that doesn't mean you don't criticize them along the way. It doesn't mean on issues like Simpson Bowles or I pointed on gun violence, which they're ignoring after numerous massacres, I'm disappointed in them, and I get angry at times because these are things they should be talking about. Last night, immigration wasn't mentioned
in
the debate.
It should have been brought up by
Joe Biden.
Atrios had a very good point at Eschaton, as he often does. But you think about what was not brought up. Immigration, gay marriage, and abortion. Now, I know you're going to say abortion was there, but he makes the point, like, it's interesting how these issues, now that they're still obviously controversial, but polling shows they are now advantageous
right.
for
the left.
For
so
the
now
left.
The media is not going to bring up. So you need to bring them up. That's the thing. It's like they should go in and
Well, let's just talk about this a little bit. Because also he makes the point of abortion was not brought up in the context of, hey, do you think that women should have the right to choose? I mean, because it's not a settled issue.
Right.
You know? Do you think
well,
that
it'll be very unsettled if the certain
but,
guys
but
win.
But instead of bringing it up in the context in which most Americans look at this, it has to be brought up in the context of
religion.
Will you ignore your religious precepts
right.
to support abortion rights? I mean, that's essentially
you're
the
Catholic.
Question. Right? I mean, that's the question that's being asked there, is that, hey, let's not make this about a woman's right to choose. This is a question as to whether or not Paul Ryan, a Catholic, Joe Biden, a Catholic,
right.
how will they formulate their position relative to their religion? What is the relevant? What is the relevance
as I
of
said,
that?
We said I last mean, night, that was the second to worst question. That was what they're tied with the...
Absurd. Absolutely absurd.
Yeah.
If a candidate wants to say that my decision is informed by my religion, or my decision is informed by a book I read once, or my decision is informed by, you know, what someone said to me, that's fine. But at the end of the day, I don't care.
All right. I think we need to send her the Virginia Statute of Religious Freedom written by Thomas Jefferson. Again, it drives me nuts because, first of all, religion shouldn't even come into it. It shouldn't even be a part of it. I don't really care. If it was just sort of an interesting thing for her to say, how do you feel about the fact that this is the first time we've had two Catholic vice presidential nominees or whatever. It was a point of interest. I still think it's one of the least important things when they've got so many important things to discuss. But to bring it in the context of abortion, if you're going to do that, then why don't you next say, the Pope said it was Catholics should oppose the war in Iraq. Why did you go against him? The Pope is against the death penalty. Why did you go against him?
The Pope is pro-union.
Why would you go? I mean, there's...
Even more than that, I would say, would you ever ask Mitt Romney? The Mormons have a precept of lying for the Lord.
Yeah.
Do you believe that you can lie on in service of your religion? I mean, there's a lot of questions, and which I actually think is far more relevant, frankly.
No, I know, but just makes me mad that they always bring up religion in the context of social issues and not social justice.
Right.
That's what you just...
And it's just interesting because we also know this is a big winner at this point for the Democrats.
Sure.
And so, I don't know. I thought Atreus had a very good point.
But he did, but my point is still, if the media is not going to bring it up, it's still the job of the president and vice president in these debates to make sure they should go in with a little spreadsheet in their heads that reminds them that they're getting... that the margin that they're ahead is Hispanics, is... single women, and the groups that are part of their younger, more multicultural, more liberal coalition, and they need to remember to speak to the issues that are important to these groups, as well as all of us, frankly.
Yeah.
So that bothered me.
That
yes.
really stood out for me. And so I think, you know, we're a couple of days away from the next debate.
The next poll we're only a couple minutes away from, probably, in this world.
I know. One thing I wanted to talk to you about, Cliff.
Yeah,
that,
yes, sir.
Is, hold on, where are we here? There was a piece, it was an interesting piece. I mean, I guess this ties in with that email that I got. But Kevin Drum wrote a piece about the hack deficit on the left. That following a debate performance like President Obama had last week, if that had happened to Mitt Romney, there would be no people like us on the right who would not be defending Romney.
No.
You know what I mean? I mean, maybe Romney is a bad example because they really hate Romney on some level. But
the general point is true.
There is a hack deficit on the left, and I think that's just a function of... But I just thought
it was... Well, because I think those of us on the left are more intellectually honest. I don't know what to say about that. Maybe we need to recruit more hacks. I can't do it because it doesn't fit in the way
I can tell you right now what it is. There's not enough money.
That's true. There's not enough people on the left being paid off to be hacks.
There's not enough money on the left for it to be part of the compensation package. You know,
it's
part of my compensation package is I don't feel like I have to compromise myself.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not like I decided I'm going to take 25% less because of that. It's just that, you know, I mean, on some level, that's the case. I don't have to compromise myself. And so,
no, I think that's a lot of it. Is that what I didn't read Kevin Drum's piece. Is that what he said?
No, I don't think so. I didn't get that far.
But I think you're right. I think that's probably a good amount of it. But I think I do. Again, let my bias show. I think there's more intellectual honesty on the left. I'm sorry. I don't think it's sort of, if you look at human nature, authoritarians tend to more, you know, march in lockstep, and people that actually believe in crazy stuff like science and reason, tend to believe that you get to the best answer by looking at something logically and reasonably and dispassionately. You know? I don't know.
Now,
but it is a problem, I think, at times. We need to recruit more hacks.
I think we should also maybe move into the story that we were going to tell. It was pretty impressive the first night we got here.
Sam is famous, just so you all know.
You kind of knew
that, too.
I'm not famous, but I have a... very narrow celebrity.
It's what my wife likes to call bowling fame. which is you're famous among a very select group of people.
Indeed.
You're a rock star and no one else knows who you are.
It was, yes.
And but so, you have bigger, a little bigger than that because you did the acting thing. Come on, there must be some people who still stop you and remember that Sex and the City episode.
That's basically it. There are times when
you're the manorexic. I mean, that's pretty cool.
Yes.
You know, I get a little bit of what you get, but less because I haven't done the acting things every once in a while. You know, yeah, so in any case, we can tell the story. Why don't you tell it? It's a cool story.
I mean, the first night we got here, you and me and Scott Milliken, the producer.
Diligent producer, sitting here working away.
He's not working on this. He's just, I don't know what he's doing. He's doing his side.
Sending out dirty texts.
And so we sit down at a blackjack table, and I am about to start the negative progression
of your life.
Of my life, but also coincidentally the betting technique that I had learned on the plane.
Also known as the progression towards homelessness.
Yes, exactly. And it turns out the dealer said, like, did I just deal to you? And I was like, no. And believe me, like, the last thing that's ever on my mind is that I'm going to get recognized in any situation. And she said, are you on the radio? I'm like, yeah, yes. And she said, oh, my God, I'm a big fan of yours. And then it turns out she's a big fan of Ring of Fire and of Cliffs. And she...
And so she's dealing to us in blackjack, but it turns out on Twitter she's Liberal Lisa.
Indeed.
Should all go follow her.
Yes. And then she kept, like, pushing me to drink and bet more. And
I lost
too much money.
Yeah.
So that was... It was the other dealer's fault? No, I'm not talking about you winning. I'm talking about me winning. So
it's about Scott.
Right. It is about Scott. So that was the story. I guess it wasn't as great as we had hoped. You want to stick around a little bit and take some phone calls?
Yeah, I'm happy
to. All right. If people want to call in, we're going to take a quick break. And I will take some IMs and some phone calls. We'll be back in just a second. No, wait a second. We'll be back in just a second. Ladies and gentlemen, Sam Cedar on the Majority Report. Taking your calls at 646-257-3920, 646-257-3920. Cliff Schechter hanging out with me to answer the calls, and it's Michael calling from Florida. You there? Michael, you there? I don't know why that's not working. We were good yesterday. Bear with me. Michael, are you there? All right. Well, we'll have to try that again. I'm not exactly sure what's going on with that.
Keep trying, Michael. We'll get you, baby.
Yes. Bear with us today.
Meantime, I thought I'd bring up something interesting while you're doing that.
Yes, please do.
Turns out, and I just saw this, consumer sentiment hits a 5-year high.
Yeah, it's
amazing.
It is pretty interesting what's going on.
It's almost like you and I planned it again with the Rothschilds.
Oh, well, that was the other thing that we forgot to mention is, of
just
course,
like that 7.8% number.
The other thing that we forgot to mention, and hold on, Michael, we see you on the calls. Give us 1 second. The other thing that we neglected to mention is that Daryl Issa what is he doing? He's doing his...
his hearings?
He's holding hearings on
Libya.
The Bureau of Labor Statistics.
Oh, that's right. He's doing it on BLS, too. I thought you were talking about the other hearings that are being held where the Republicans outed a CIA operation in Benghazi.
Yes. Please talk about that,
because you definitely want to trust. That's, I thought that Biden might bring that up last night. He should have. He should have said, you and your congressional buddies. Jason Chaffetz, or however you pronounce his ridiculous name, went on, they held these hearings in Libya, went on in Libya, which should be done. It should be, I mean, there's no doubt, unlike what happened after 9/11, we should look into this because this is important to know where there was a security failure. Obviously, right now, they're doing it under the guise of partisan politics, as they do everything. And turns out, they didn't like the answers they were getting, so they started going into how, this was a undercover operation and hurt the CIA, and they basically outed the fact that one of the two consulates there was actually, there were CIA operations going on. And this is now, as some people pointed out, put agents at risk and put American lives at risk, like what they did with Valerie Plame. Remember, these are the guys that love our country so much. So much that they want to get our people killed.
All right, let's try go to the phones again. Michael, are you there?
I am.
How's it going, Michael?
Jamie, I hope you guys are having fun. It's almost like Bill and Ted's excellent adventure out there, except that Sammy and Cliff's excellent adventure. You could actually put this on the road and make a movie script out of it. Anyway,
I think it would be a little bit... I think you could probably sustain about 4 minutes of a movie.
If you could help people pay to go to that movie, I'd do it.
Dude, I was watching you guys... It was interesting. I had you guys on the iPad listening to the debate. We're on the radio while watching the baseball playoff game. In fact, I actually told you that A-Rod was going to strike out at an opportune time.
Oh, that was you. I know. So. A-Rod, man. The chances of A-Rod hitting the ball is like Social Security going broke.
It was a good day for the home team in that regard. Listen, real quick, it's fun to talk to you two. Real fast, I told Sammy this a couple times. When Tuesday night rolls around, maybe Obama will have his A game, maybe he won't. I just don't think it's in his nature to be not just confrontational, but he just doesn't show the willingness to fight for what he believes in. Now, Sammy and I went through this last week about what does he believe in, but let me put it this way. He's 22 days away from Election Day, and you're looking at a situation where essentially the polls in the swing states are more or less dead even, including my own home state. Yeah. He had a cushion, and he pissed that cushion away by his performance 10 days ago. My point to you and my question to you guys is this. Can you ever show me at any point in his political career where he's had to actually not just physically engage himself, but emotionally invest himself in a fight where he had to come out on top? I guess the Hillary fight up to a point, but they were so inept in terms of running that campaign.
Well, wait,
I can't think of anything where he had to do this.
Hold on.
And so when Romney goes off on one of his tangents and rants,
Michael,
does he have the stones to do what Biden did yesterday and say, no, look,
Michael,
you're wrong.
Michael, hold
They're
on.
Going
Michael,
to take
can
away
you hear
your
me?
Medicare, period.
Michael, can you hear me?
Michael, yeah, sure. Okay. Go, Sammy.
Hold on for 1 second. First off, I will say this. I think there was a failure of executing a strategy by President Obama. You and I may not like that strategy. It is a strategy that he feels comfortable with. But I think he failed at even executing that strategy, which was the problem with that debate. But I will also say I don't agree with your assessment of the polls in the swing states. I think it's tighter than it was 2 weeks ago, but not tighter than it was before the convention, and Obama was still ahead in the swing states before the convention.
I think it's actually reverted back to where it was, where he's got a mid-single digit lead in some states like New Hampshire, Iowa, Nevada, Ohio, enough to carry him over the top. And yes, in your home state, that's the one thing you're right about. Florida, right at this point, is too close to call, but he can lose Florida and still win. I mean,
and then I would also say, dude, the campaign with Clinton was, he was pretty engaged in that, I think. I mean, I don't know. I don't want to be in a position of defending him, but I think he's going to come back at this debate. I don't think he's going to be as aggressive as people
as people like you and I would want, and I don't think he's going to give the full-throated defense of leftist policies that I would want. But I think he's, you know, I think it's going to be a better
policy. Well, I'm not even talking about whether or not you agree with his policies. If you're in a debate with someone and they say something that is manifestly untrue in front of you, and you don't have the wherewithal to stop them, and yeah, maybe do the ungentlemanly non-Harvard Law Review thing, okay? This is what you need to do. No, you're wrong. You're going to take away people's Medicare. You want to put us back in the same situation from 4 years ago. He doesn't have the ability to articulate in a forceful manner, which is what these debates unfortunately calls for. I'm afraid that we're going to get bamboozled like we did 8 years ago, or what is it, 12 years ago, and my state was at the forefront of it, thank you very much. You know, in sense that there's going to be just enough BS to cover the line.
I will agree with you that I'm concerned the way I wasn't concerned about Biden, because there is no doubt that President Obama by nature is conciliatory to a fault, and is not one to stand up and be that forceful. But I think, you know, he had a relatively easy race in 2004. In 2008, things kind of swung his way with the economic crash towards the end there. And I guess what I'm saying is we're going to see now, because now his back's up against the wall. I really do think he wants to win re-election, and I think he's got a little bit of a lead right now, and I think he realizes the damage that was done by that first debate. So I guess, you know, it's put up or shut up time. Let's see him do it.
You'll have to call back
in. I'm with you guys on the hack thing, by the way. If I have to watch MSNBC and that clown in the morning with it, never mind, I'm going to get into it. But the point is, those guys run the narrative, and until you get around that, I mean, even your pal Ezra Klein and Sam Stein, when they get on there, they just genuflect to that stupid redneck to the point where it's just nauseating. It's puke-inducing. And no one, except for Howard Dean, will sit up there and call him what he, you know, call it the way it is. It's just aggravating. And I'm not nearly as liberal as you guys are,
right,
but it's just infuriating.
Well, let's just say, Sam Stein, I would defend. Ezra Klein's no friend of mine.
Wow. I'm not, I mean, from a political standpoint, I'm not aligned with Ezra Klein.
No, politically, and I guess I shouldn't say personally, I've got nothing against Ezra. Politically, he probably maddens me as much as he does you, so.
Yes. All right, Michael.
Hey, guys, one last thing.
What's that?
While you're out there, go to Circus, great steakhouse, best one in town.
Circus.
Have fun.
All right.
Thanks, man.
You won't regret it, I promise you.
All right. If you
Sam's
see
got
some.
A lot of regrets out here already, so
I
we probably
so
should
many
do something.
Regrets, I can't even begin to tell you.
Sam, you should play craps. It's the best odds in the house. But anyway, that's another story.
That's not what that
day.
Book I bought said. Thanks, Michael. That's not what I heard. That's like, you know, people just keep pushing me to lose more of my money. And
I've tried to save you. I've keep telling you,
last
they've got really
night,
good
I lost
movies $15, in the room.
$15,000. And I thought like your ATM was not allowed to kick out that much money.
You lost $15,000? That I don't believe. But I could believe you lost like $1,000.
No.
Not that bad?
No, God, no. I mean, I would be in problems that I couldn't even articulate.
You're trying to help the Nevada economy.
That's right.
Which, you know, it's
no,
important.
I mean, I thought I was back on the road to making the money back, but I mean, I lost what is a lot of money for.
So it's amazing. The house found a way to win again. It's almost like they have this whole thing figured out.
It would be a great business model. Let's go back to the phones. 646-257-3920. This is Jeremo.
Sam.
Jeremo.
How are you?
I'm doing good. How you doing?
Sammy, you're with Cliff, so it's perfect that I can call and say, I know I'm being a little bit of a hog, but, you know, Cliff, I text messaged Cliff a while back, and you know what a nice guy and what a sincere guy. He texted me right back and said, thank you, Jeremo, for the thoughts, and so nice to you. I really appreciate that.
You didn't
that.
Text him. You tweeted him. You tweeted him, right?
What's that? Yeah, I tweeted him, right.
Oh, yeah. I try to do my best to answer when I can. I appreciate that, by the way. Thank you.
Thank you. Sandy, real quick, this is what I want to talk about.
Yeah.
You know, I was driving to work yesterday. I'm saying to myself, you know, I got my membership with Sam, and I'm getting my money's worth definitely. And then I started to think about how many shows such as you know, the one on NBC, I can't even think of the name of the damn show, with Meet the Press. How many Meet the Press shows could you, and the insight that you give us as compared to what Meet the Press gives us? Probably around 10. You probably need 10 shows to equal out what you give us in insight.
Yes, I understand what you're saying. You're saying this show is 10 times more insightful than Meet the Press.
Exactly right.
No,
and that's
right.
Why I pay, and that's why I got my membership. What those guys tell us absolutely nothing.
Well, Jeremo, I wish I could argue with you, but
they do tell you what is going on in Georgetown, and that's very important.
Jeremo, thanks for the call, buddy.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sam. Bye now.
Bye. Now, Jeremo gave us a Freebie Friday liner. We also got another Freebie Friday liner, but I didn't load them up onto my soundboard.
Sammy.
Before I was traveling. So we're going to have to hold those for the next Freebie Friday, and I feel badly about that because people did a really good job. Let's go to the IMs. We've got a couple of IMs here. Dradman. Oh, I didn't know this. I thought it was Dradmanthes, but it's actually Dr. Radmanthes. Ryan's secret plan with Iran is zombie Ayn Rand. Ryan, you can't spell Iran without Ayn Rand. Can't spell anything without Ayn Rand. I learned to spell reading Ayn Rand. This is from last night. Fox is funnier. Oh, we got a lot of people who said Fox last night in terms of wanting us to watch the post-debate. That's what I more or less like to do. Kevin 11721, you got to laugh at the right's Goldilocks syndrome. Ooh, Obama's too meek. Now Biden's too strong.
That's a great point.
Yeah.
That's a great point.
Well, this whole argument is like, the Ryan's entire foreign policy argument is that, okay, I would do the same thing, except for 3 months ago, I wouldn't have been so nice sounding. It was really,
you know what, Sam? I just want to point out, at least in my Twitter feed, it's Friday, and I know that our friend Lisa is going to be dealing again, and I just got her a couple of followers on Twitter. So you may want to go remind her that, you know, that she's we got our friend Victor Rocco here and Tony Betts who are jumping in, and they're reaching out to liberal Lisa. So I think you should remind her and, you know, see if she'll hook you up with some free money.
Oh, you know,
she'll probably get fired. But,
yeah,
you know.
I don't think that happens. But Matt IMs me and reminds me to say, don't forget to promote Podcast Awards. Go to podcastawards.com and vote, nominate the Majority Report for News and Politics and People's Choice. I believe it is News and Politics and People's Choice. At podcastawards.com, folks, it makes a big difference to us.
It's just straight
because it actually helps. Helps.
No vodka.
Wow. Cliff is actually drinking more.
Red Bull. No
really?
Vodka in it. Sans vodka.
Wow.
That's French for without. Speak American, man.
Kevin 11721, that really says it all. The right can only focus on style because they know they'll always lose on substance because their goals, their stated goals. Their stated goals hurt 99% of voters. I hope Ryan's attitude and confused answers on Medicare will give Obama Biden Florida. Biden was great on this. You know, I'll tell you something. I think this is a great point. I would not be surprised if there is a cohort that watches those debates. I bet you it's elderly people. And when Joe Biden looks into camera and says, you know, who have you always trusted on
Oh, I definitely.
Medicare and Social Security. I think that's going to really
resonate. No, because I think they go back and they remember the party that they were members of for years before they got swayed on some social issues here and there. No, I agree. I think that's big. And I think that's another thing that I think Biden did really well, was looking at the camera and looking like he was in command.
He couldn't have been clearer if he beat them over the head with a walker. The deaf and blind got his message. This is exactly what, and all, millions of seniors were wanting and waiting to hear, an explicit promise that may have been the clincher plus chinch.
Clincher?
He made up his own word there.
Hey, we've got some artistes in the audience.
Bush in chains.
Scott Milliken's dancing now.
No, I can't even. Wow. All right, I can't do all. Let's see. October 12th. Good news on the inflation front. As long as you don't drive a car or eat.
Somebody worried about inflation?
Yeah. I mean, the thing that my friend Bush in chains doesn't understand is that there are two types of inflation. One is because of chokes in the supply of a commodity. In other words, gas, oil. There are like three or four refineries that are down at the moment in this country. Maybe two.
By the way, I don't even believe that there's not some gouging going on.
Well, there may be some gouging going on, but the point is, this is not a function of the inflation that you are supposedly afraid of. Bush and chains. Food, same deal. This is not a function. This is a function of diminished supply in certain areas. This is not a function of some type of financial or monetary inflation. And it's embarrassing for you that you keep conflating it. And that you only bring it up when it goes up, but never when it goes down. Where were you when it went down over the summer?
Also, I mean, this has been one of those Republican arguments that they've used since Reagan. They scream about inflation because the whole point that they want to do is they want to cut government spending.
Well, Bush and chains, I mean, is not...
So, well, he's not with us, I know, so I don't really care what he thinks, but I'm just kidding. I love you, Mr. Chains. But in all honesty, yeah, inflation. Well, how about, I'm going to worry first about people having jobs. So, you know, if that creates a little bit of inflation.
Well, everybody needs gold.
I think that's
the point. Everybody needs gold. My own Huckabee, Biden was like an obnoxious drunk at the debate. My own random rush. Limbaugh, Joe Biden was the Democrat Party last night. The Democrat Party is very rude and mean.
I didn't know you had these trolls who listen.
No. He's mocking Limbaugh.
Oh, okay. But it sounds like the other guy was kind of trolling.
No, this is Bush and chains.
I'm impressed.
White House parasite Warren Buffett, America's biggest welfare queen. 40 years of drug war failure represented in a single chart. Jesus, your morality stops at owning a house, but not at giving away the people's money for 0%. You need to be flogged at this point. You are the people's enemy. Todd, legitimate...
Is that me? Should I be flogged?
I don't know what he's talking about.
I should probably be flogged once or twice in my life.
Todd, legitimate rate Aiken. Evolution is not a matter of science. Lacker says Fed stimulus will do little for the economy. Keep your trash at home. Quran burning pastor Terry Jones barred from Canada. Good news from Mark Maron, Danish website holding smallest penis contest. Sam, you and Schechter lack of market knowledge, and the massaged economic numbers coming from the government are about as insensitive as your views on women. Hey, Cliff, tell us again how husbands... Sam is going to teach me about inflation. This is Friday Funnies at
its best. I'll just put it this way. What I say, obviously, out there to you, Mr. Schmuck Republican, is much more important than Representative Desjarlais in Tennessee, who doesn't want to let any woman get an abortion until he pressures one into it. So, yeah, my comments are much worse than the people that are actually in your party.
No, he's not a Republican. He's just extremely Bush in chains.
Well, he's extremely stupid, is what he is. So
That's there may be some.
But I know. Gnash your teeth because I made a bad comment, and that's horrible.
See, you can't go after Cliff that way. He bites back.
I'm Biden. I don't take it from people like you, pal.
Lawyer Matthew tells me that I should not be so hard on my golf game.
I am a tremendous slouch, he says. A square, hoping your commentary with Chris on debate makes it to member with Cliff. Member podcast, it will be. I have to say I enjoyed the Biden show last night, even though I have issues with some of his statements. Sure, you noticed he changed the Social Security quote. We will not cut Social Security to will we will not privatize it. Not sure if I'm reading into it, but it's different always on the grand bargain watch.
Sam caught it. Sam's yes. A smart one as always.
I did catch that. And, yeah.
I appreciated that.
A little
from Sam.
Nerve-wracking, but we'll see. Let's go, Bartleby. Discouraged to see Biden leave the door open to Medicare and Social Security reform. Not too surprising. His chief of staff ran Simpson Bowles Group. I will say this. There is a story of... there is a story that is out there right now that Chuck Schumer has basically shifted the playing field to where he will not stand for any type of tax reform that lowers rates.
Yeah.
Something to the effect. I mean, I haven't quite followed this intensely. I know David Dayen thinks this is going to throw a monkey wrench into the whole thing.
No, it seems like he's serious about it. I'm not sure if Schumer is positioning himself for something in 2016.
Well, this is part of the fight where he wants to lead the Senate, right? He wants
to replace
Durbin, right?
That's a great
point. Because Durbin...
You're so right. I didn't even think about that.
Durbin is a Simpson Bowles guy.
Right. So you stand up against it. That's a great point.
And so I think what we're seeing is... Now, here's the problem, is that in many respects, I am far more... sympathetic to Dick Durbin, except for on this one area. Now, of course, Dick Durbin is hurting his own brand.
Yeah, but, I mean, what it comes down to is this one area is kind of all-encompassing.
Right.
When it comes to the budget and it comes to Simpson Bowles, we bring up Social Security and Medicare because they're important parts, but Simpson Bowles also cuts many other things. I mean, it's damaging in a lot of ways, so if Dick Durbin is going to tie himself to that,
right.
Well, he's
good.
Lost
there
me.
Should be some punishment
then he's
there.
He's lost
That's
me.
Good. Let's go back to the phones. You're calling from a 919 area code. Who's this?
Hey, Sam. This is Triangle Bill.
Triangle Bill.
North Kakalaki.
Welcome.
The swinging is the swing stage.
Good to hear from you, Triangle Bill.
Hey. I called in a couple of weeks. I thought I'd get a quick ring.
Great.
I'm enjoying the show today. I wanted to quickly, I got two quick things for you, and after saying that I do appreciate the broadcast last night, it was very entertaining, it was awesome, so thanks for doing that.
Well, our pleasure.
But I have a movie review and a quick comment.
Oh, good, because we actually need a movie review today.
Well, I'll do my best. I saw it this past week, and I think you might enjoy it because you've mentioned liking kind of actiony stuff on the somewhat violent body count stuff. So there's this movie. It's called Red State.
Red State.
Have you seen that?
Is that that Kevin Smith one?
Red. I don't. Kevin Smith. I think it's 2011.
Yeah.
It's fairly new.
I think that's that Kevin Smith.
John Goodman kind of plays a supporting. Yeah.
I will check it out. I've been meaning to watch that for a long time.
It's very topical because it's kind of a takeoff a little bit on the Fred Phelps, Westboro Baptist Church kind of thing with sort of a domestic terrorism aspect. It's kind of got a Tarantino-esque kind of quality because it's very violent, but... And it's kind of...
Thanks, buddy.
You just don't... It's got some weird twist that you don't necessarily predict, thinking, oh, okay, I see where this story's going, and, you know, I know what's going to happen next. But you're like, holy crap, they just killed that guy, you know, that sort of thing. So...
I'm interested in that.
It's really good.
I got to say, if I watch that one, I'll probably watch... Before I watch that one, I probably would watch that Bob Goldthwait movie that sounds somewhat similar... But I may get to that, but I appreciate the recommendation.
You're welcome. I'm glad to. I also wanted to just mention, and this is more for just like everybody out there that's listening, I became aware this past week that Common Cause is trying to mount, in these last few weeks, they're trying to mount a counter offensive against this whole, like, what is it called, True the Vote?
True the Vote,
right-wing kind of stuff.
Great.
And so I don't know if Common, I don't know if they're doing it on a national basis, but here in North Carolina, the Common Cause North Carolina is partnering with a local sort of nonpartisan clean elections advocacy kind of group called Democracy North Carolina. And what they're doing is they're training people up to show up and be poll watchers on voting day, and I guess in the early voting period as well, but to basically keep an eye and see if you know, somebody looks like they're challenged, like anybody that walks in that's brown automatically gets challenged. That sort of thing.
And well, so, I'll tell you what, Bill. We'll get the link, and you know, I think I'll have someone on the program, because True the Vote, I've been reading about this, is a terrifying. I think this is going to be really ugly. And apparently, my understanding is that in Texas, you can challenge someone's vote. And now, Texas is really not really in play, so it's, you know, it's problematic in the sense that people should not be intimidated from voting. It's not going to necessarily.
It's all about intimidation.
But in Texas,
it's all about intimidation.
In Texas, you can challenge someone's right to vote. You can challenge their legitimacy without actually having to sign any affidavit. There's no legal consequences for you to lie, knowingly lie about it. So that's very problematic. But this True the Vote stuff is creepy. And I got to let you go, Bill, but we'll do something on it next week. Appreciate the call.
Yeah, I would just suggest to people to, you know, these last few weeks are critical, and just if they have some time, you know, go to the Common Cause website and get in there and be a, watch out, you know, fight back against these jerks.
Thanks, Bill. Appreciate the call.
Thanks, Sam. Bye.
This True the Vote thing is creepy.
I know.
I think I've
so
brought
not surprising.
It up a while back, but we should have somebody on, because I'm really curious as to what is going to be done in response to this. Going back to the IMs, Left Coast Marcus tells me it was Krugman that said Gingrich is what stupid people think smart people sound like. There it is.
There you go. That's about right.
Into Architecture, is Cliff drunk or severely sleep deprived? He's acting a little weird today.
I think the answer is both.
Yeah, well, in Vegas.
No, neither. It's just one of those days.
Digging your road music. You should try some Rachmaninoff Piano Concerto No. 2 in C minor, the greatest composition in music history. Number 2. Do you think you have downplayed the importance of presidential debate and Obama's loss and trumped up the VP debate? Don't you think you have? And Biden's win? Nobody watched the VP debate. Even Michael in Florida didn't watch the debate. He's watching baseball. To the extent that debates matter in the mainstream narrative, as you've said, people vote for the top of the ticket. Yeah, no, I'm not saying that this is going to change any votes. All I'm saying is that it's changed the media narrative.
Which, by extension, actually does change votes. I mean, I
don't know.
I don't think it's going to change votes individually. I agree with you. But if it changes over the course of time, the way the media covers the race, we know that has a huge influence.
Right.
Let's just put it that way.
Right, right. That's been my point. Janet, as upsetting as the Raddatz question was regarding the bankruptcy of Social Security and Medicare, what are we to take from the fact that Biden chose not to correct the fallacy? I think he dropped the ball there, but I think that...
Yeah.
I'm more concerned that he explicitly did not give the same guarantee that he did a month ago, or 5 weeks ago, or whenever it was, 2 months ago. Defeatocrat, is Majority FM caller Mike from Florida on Twitter, Sam? That guy has a lot of smart things to say. I'd love to follow. I don't know. Next time he's on, we'll ask him. Kyle, please don't forget to tell everybody to vote for me in the podcast awards under the top nerd category. Kyle, is there a top nerd category? If there is, someone should vote for Kyle.
Definitely vote Kyle. Top nerd.
Bush and Chain says, I am not a Republican. I am a progressive. You are both mean drunks. It shows. I'm not a mean drunk.
All righty. I was the one who's being mean.
You're a teetotaler, aren't you?
Yeah. No, not completely. So, I have drinks, but not very much. Not like I used to.
Jason Parton. Hey, Sam. Haven't I am in a while or listened live, I'm afraid to say, but I'm here today with my one little observation. Joe Biden came across as a statesman. While there were some bumps in the road with some of the things that we were talked about last night, he came across as a person. Paul Ryan, on the other hand, came across as some kind of local TV anchorman. Very stiff, very bland, very uninformed. Could he have been Romney bot 2.0? Right there at the end when he was waiting a sound or two for the right camera to pick him up, I had a small flashback of Michelle Bachmann after the State of the Union address. I thought that was one of the worst moments he had when he was looking in directly into the camera, but, you know, that was me.
So did I. It didn't seem real.
Kevin 11721, I never thought of Biden as a feasible headliner 4 years from now, but after last night's performance, I can say Biden 2016 without getting all red-faced. PF 1800, not saying inflation should be a focus of concern, but food prices have gone up pretty sharply over the last couple of years, at least where I'm shop. I'm excluding produce. Oh, absolutely. This is a function, frankly, of global warming. You've had massive droughts across the country. We have grain prices going through the roof.
Yep.
Corn, a lot of things like produce. 90% of the apples in New York State were wiped out. This is a function of a commodity being scarce, not of no fluctuation in supply and simply monetary inflation.
In terms of that global warming stuff, though, the science isn't all in yet.
No, I know. I know. I mean, we've been around for, like, what, almost 5,000 years in this planet. And
that's
so
true.
We would have known already by
maybe six.
If global warming was
you
real,
can tell
we,
by
we,
the
we would have known about it
by Noah's flood that led the dinosaur bones to land where they are.
John P. Kirk, did you guys mention or pick up on Martha Raddatz's comments regarding the military differing from civilian leadership on military strategy? Biden's response was strong, but I found that point of view that there is a conflict between the military and the Obama administration proposed by a moderator very strange. What did you think of that? I think, you know, that's always been, we've seen a lot of that. I think the premise, let's put it this way, the premise that somehow it is political to say we should be out of a country by 2014, it's very problematic to me. Because when she says political, it makes it seem like it's like a partisan cheap thing, as opposed to the fact that we have civilian leadership in this country. The reason why we have civilian leadership is so that the country has to buy into a war, theoretically. Sometimes they can be lied. And if the country does not want to engage in a war, they will tell the civilian leadership of the military, get out of this war.
Right.
The idea that that's just, like, political in the cheapest way that Martha Raddatz could possibly mean it should be deeply offensive and is really contrary to the fundamental ideals of this country. I don't give a shit what the military says.
That's exactly, that's
in terms of whether or not we should be waging a war. I think, look, As a commander in chief, it would make sense for you to listen to what the military is saying, not necessarily always follow it because they have their own agenda too. In terms of tactical and strategic
consideration,
things,
certainly.
But whether or not we should leave
No, that to me is like the religion question, which is that offends me at my very core, because these guys who claim to love the Constitution and respect the Constitution in so many different spots was trying to protect us from exactly this, from what they saw going on in England.
Baked into the cake tyranny of religion, question,
the tyranny of military empires, and it is. And you know, of course, you want to get the views of the guys on the ground. You want to use all of their expertise and everything from the fact that they fought battles, and you want to know tactically what's working and strategically what's working. But our civilian leaders make the decisions about going to war and peace. And the fact that Republicans fetishize generals and try to claim that they should be making these decisions, they should be called out for what it is. That is anti-American. That is not what this country stands for. Let them go live in Saudi Arabia or the Sudan or somewhere if that's what they want.
The problematic part is that this is built into the question asked by the so-called foreign policy expert, Martha Raddatz.
Agreed. Overall, I thought she did a much better job of you know, shutting people up when they needed to be shut up and keeping on questions and whatever. I mean, compared to Lehrer, of course, that poster of you up on the wall here, Sam, did a better job than Jim Lehrer of doing things. But and it's a very nice poster, by the way. But in all seriousness, I mean, Martha Raddatz, I think overall on that did a better job. I think the premises of some of her questions were flawed, though.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way.
Dave with the dignity. Yep, get to the top of the hill and scream about that vote garbage. Caller was right about that crap, and I'm personally glad for the update about Common Cause. In 08, we talked a lot about needing extra couple of points to make up for Republican voter suppression. I haven't heard enough about beating it back. Not enthused about Obama-Biden, but I hate the idea of all these freaking right-wingers out there trying to intimidate voters. F the racist. Seriously, I'm loving Common Cause, but I may just go rogue and make my little clipboard to their polling places and start asking for ID. A-holes. Jason Parton. Also, no offense to local TV anchor people, persons, whatever.
Hey, I'd like to bring something up here, if I can jump in for a second.
Yes.
Just popped up in Think Progress. A good friend of ours, David Schuster, just sent this out on Twitter. Vice presidential debate, Ryan told 24 myths in 40 minutes. And I've gotten his 24 myths broken down here. But remember, Joe Biden laughed a few times. So that negates the fact that Paul Ryan was lying the whole time.
Going to Cool J146. Food inflation is also a function of corn being used for biofuel. 10 years ago, 5% of corn was used for biofuel. Now it's 40%. Should interview someone about that. Perhaps someone from the Perry Institute at UMass. I'll look into that.
That's not the Rick Perry Institute, is it?
No.
I know, just having fun.
Heathen Steven, food prices are also a function of being above $90 a barrel for so long. I don't think any of the candidates have a firm grasp on our fuel situation. John P. Kirk. Jinx. Okay. And the final I am of the day, ladies and gentlemen, will be Sagita. C-SPAN showed the 1984 VP debate, Bush v. Ferraro. We are still turning our backs on freedom fighters.
Is that what Bush said? Is that what we're saying here?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
But ladies and gentlemen, that is our program for today. I'll be back Monday live in the studio unless I am unable to get home because I've had to sell my plane ticket.
I'm going to go get more drunk and sleep deprived.
Okay, so folks, we will see you on Monday. Remember, if you can afford to become a member of the Majority Report, we certainly need your support. Other ways of supporting the show, go to majority.fm/support the show. Plenty of other things you can do. Don't forget the podcast awards, podcastawards.com. Please nominate us. I think the nominations are ending today.
Nominate.
Or tomorrow, or sometime over the weekend. But
you can also support the show by following at Cliff Schechter on Twitter.
That's right.
It's very important for the show.
All right, folks. We'll see you on Monday.
It might take all the strength I got
to get to where I want. Oh, and thank you, Cliff.
I know somehow.
Well, you're welcome.
I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the lie.
legacy.